OTB AM. Right, we've still got plenty to come on the show this morning. But yesterday, we told you about an exclusive interview that's available right now only on the OTB Sports app. Brian O'Driscoll in conversation with Irish actor Jamie Dornan. Here they are on Dornan's rugby credentials.
From a rugby point of view, you played a bit of rugby. To a good standard?
What is a good standard? I mean, compared to you, probably not a great standard. But I played an okay standard. I played in the first at Methody, which is a big rugby school, but only in my upper sixth year, not in fifth year or lower sixth. I was, in fact, I was nowhere near it either of those years.
Back three on the wing, fullback.
I was out half until upper sixth, and then moved on to the wing when they realised I did the 100 sub 11. So it was, you know, I didn't really have a choice, and also because at 10, I probably ran it too much myself, and they thought maybe give me a bit more space. And David Wells, who's our coach, who's sort of iconic figure up in the north, decided to move me onto the wing. And then I
love that you've spun that positively. That's so good. it's always a promotion from 10 to the wing, isn't it?
OTB AM. Alan Quinlan is with us now. Good morning to you, Alan.
Morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. A couple of interesting things to talk about this week, Alan, and it's a story that was developing earlier in the week. It's a story that's carried on the back of the Irish Independent this morning, that the IRFU and Rugby Players Ireland are going to meet again next week to discuss potential pay cuts. Rugby Players Ireland disappointed to hear about the proposed pay cuts of 20,000 euro, or sorry, not 20,000 euro, sorry, 20%. The 20% pay cuts is what I meant to say. This is precarious enough times, isn't it, to be a rugby player, to be involved in the IRFU, because there is a huge degree of uncertainty, first of all, about this whole thing and what is going to happen.
Yeah, there is. I think, obviously, the statement came out from Rugby Players Ireland last weekend. The IRFU proposed these pay cuts right across their non-playing staff and players. And I think it was inevitable. It had to happen. There was pay deferrals in March when at the start of this pandemic, which were all agreed. I think ultimately the RFU are losing up to €1 million a month, and they just can't keep going with the way they're going. They've got to put in some long-term plans, and that will require pay cuts right across the board to save money. They're still going to lose a lot of money, I think, you know, with no real sight of fans going into games and the turnstiles clicking open again. I think they're going to have to weather the storm for a long time, and part of that is pay cuts. And we've seen in so many sporting organizations right across the world where people have to take pay cuts. So with respect to the players, I think, and you know, I was just thinking, if I was a player in the same situation, I think they know it's going to happen, and they've got it will be agreed. But I think, you know, the statement that was released last weekend was one of, we should have been consulted first, and it's nothing should have been released to the press before it was all agreed. But ultimately, it's going to happen on, and that's just the reality of it. And it's going to affect people at different levels, but they've got to take it on the chin, and that's just the reality of it. I think it's been more positive this week. Two people from the RFU met two representatives from Rugby Players Ireland to try and trash out a deal. But it's a much more positive situation than it was last week. Tensions were pretty high. And I suppose that's always going to be the case in any sort of negotiations. And they're going to meet next week again to try and trash out a deal and agree that potential 20% pay cut right across the board for the players.
Mm. A non-playing staff could be reduced to 4-day weeks is another potential line here. It does paint a picture that, like as you say, until you get people back in through the turnstiles, until the cash is flowing again within the organisation, it's going to be very, very hard to reach those same levels that were achieved beforehand if you've got non-playing staff that aren't working as much as
And I think the... the non-playing staff are going to be reduced to a four-day a week, and Rugby Players Ireland are arguing that you can't, you know, reducing the players, they can't just take a day off and just do 4 days. Their job is pretty much all consuming. It can be, I know you have certain breaks throughout the week and you could have a day off during the week, but you're then you're working at the weekend if you're playing matches. So I think that's where the argument, but look, ultimately this will get agreed. They've got to accept pay cuts, and that's just where it's at. The RFU can keep, and they fund all the provinces as well, you know, and if the RFU get into financial difficulties, that will trickle right down into the provinces and the funding of the game here in Ireland. So it's just a reality that players are going to have to accept, and I'm sure they will accept it. I'm sure Simon Keogh, Rugby Players Ireland, will you know, be formulating plans and to the forefront of those negotiations with the RFU. So there's a bit of pain that's going to have to be accepted here right across the board for everyone.
How important is it that these pay cuts are restored and that, I guess, the rugby economy bounces back as quickly as possible from this? Because we've already been in a situation in this country where it, the promise of playing Ireland is what kept the top players in this country. We obviously had people who wanted to go and earn more money abroad, and the payoff was that they wouldn't play for Ireland. If there is an increasing disparity between Irish wages and Premiership or top 14 wages, could that potentially have a terrible legacy, really, on those who will actually stay and play rugby in Ireland?
Well, like I said, the international game funds the rugby programs here in Ireland, funds the provinces. So the RFU have got to protect that. And until international rugby comes back with fans, with the sponsors, with the hospitality, all that stuff that generates the funds on a big Six Nations Day or a test window in November, until that comes back, I think nobody will know, because it's just very, very uncertain ground where all this will end up. Philip Brown did say a couple of weeks ago that, of course, there's a potential that players may, when it comes up to the next round of contracts, who knows where we're going to be in 12 months. And this financial hit that the RFU have taken the last few months and will take for the next little while is going to be around for a while. They've got to recalibrate their financial situation and hopefully get back on track and earn money again, like any businesses, I think. So it's a business model that's losing money at the moment. They need to generate funds again. And I think it will be reflected in the next rounds of contract talks, particularly with the top earners who command figures of up to $500,000, €600,000, €700,000 a year, the top earners in Ireland get now. That's still a little bit lower than possibly what you get in France, the money that's been thrown around in France. But, you know, I was speaking to Ron Nogara last week about this. The clubs in France are taking a financial hit as well. But a lot of the clubs there are owned by individuals who are millionaires, billionaires in some cases, and they can weather the storm, if you like, and you just look at Leon announcing the signing of Isaac Rodda, the Australian international, who left the Reds in not so nice circumstances recently over pay cuts there. He had an argument over his salary there, and suddenly he's going to Leon at the start in September. So the financial clout of the French clubs will always be there, and possibly some of the Premiership clubs, but. And that's going to pose a risk for some of the internationals going forward. If this situation gets fixed and, you know, international rugby comes back and the Six Nations, the Italy-France game is played, the TV money will come through to the RFU, their allocation. November internationals, which generates a lot of money, not just for the RFU, but for the local economy in Dublin as well and in Ireland with people coming in. But there's a lot of unknowns and uncertainties around that yet on. So hopefully they can get back on track. But like I say, in the short term, the players are going to have to take pay cuts. They have taken pay deferrals, but the pay cuts are going to come in now, and they could last for 12 months. They could last for 2 years. Who knows?
Yeah, and I guess when it comes to those centralised contracts, the RFU want to be in as good a negotiating position as possible come next year, and hopefully by then people will be coming through the turnstiles and they'll at least be able to restore the pay cuts, if nothing else. We should chat about some of the rugby that's actually been happening. I think you've been watching some of the action we've seen from the Southern Hemisphere. It kind of goes up a notch this weekend, I think, with a bit more from... next month from Australia coming back into gear from the 3rd of July. But we've obviously been watching the Super Rugby from New Zealand anyway. It's been pretty good, Alan. It's not exactly the worst product. It's actually something we should be watching a hell of a lot more of, even when we have a full slate of sport available.
Yeah, I think it was strange seeing live rugby last weekend with crowds in New Zealand. It was fantastic to see. I think a couple of the games were on very early, but they were repeated on Sky later in the morning, and we saw the drama of Warren Gatland's son getting a late drop goal to beat his side, the Chiefs. Bryn Gatland was playing, came off the bench for the Highlanders, and they beat the Chiefs right at the death. So there was brilliant, great drama there. I spoke to Jason Holland last Friday. His Hurricanes side, former Munster player Jason Holland, his Hurricanes side went to Auckland, and they played in front of a record crowd in Eden Park, which is crazy for a Super Rugby match. They do struggle a little bit sometimes to get the massive crowds there that we get here. We're blessed at times in Ireland when we have club games here, the crowds that go. But they struggle a little bit, the Hurricanes against the Blues in Eden Park. But it's just incredible. When you look on, I think without naming names and going through all the teams that have played, the four teams that played last weekend, the Crusaders had a weekend off. You just see the array of talent, the power, the pace, the speed. And it was interesting. Eddie Jones was interviewed on Sky TV, New Zealand Sky rugby program last week. And they asked him about the young players coming through. And he told them that they have the best academies in the world, Fiji, Tonga, and Samoa. It wasn't taken very, very, very nicely, I don't think. But look, they have incredible players. There's just a conveyor belt of players coming through. And watching the Super Rugby last weekend for me was just to see the talent, the young players coming through that they have. Names that we haven't heard about. Some names that we are recognisable from the All Blacks. Beauden Barrett was the big talking point, him playing with the Blues last weekend, his move from the Hurricanes and playing against his former team, which was, you know, I asked Jason Holland about that. What happened? How did it come about that someone who's, embedded in the Hurricanes franchise and for so long, his brother plays there, Geordie as well. The other brother, Scott, plays in the Crusaders. But how a player can leave like that. That'd be like back in the day, Brian O'Driscoll coming signing for Munster or Ronan O'Gara going signing for Leinster. It was that big a deal in New Zealand. And so he didn't, the Hurricanes were trying to keep their composure with him last week. He had a couple of scuffles with Dane Coles, but it was brilliant to watch. One of the big issues around the two games last weekend was the breakdown, the amount of penalties and the new directives around, they're not law changes, but new directives about players rolling away much quicker and less of a contest for the ball and trying to speed up the game. But there were so many penalties in the four games last weekend. It was frustrating. It was a lot of stop-start stuff that was in it. But there's two good games this weekend. The Chiefs play the Blues and the Hurricanes play the Crusaders. So certainly something to whet the rugby appetite at the moment, and we've been starved of rugby, but certainly the quality and the talent of some of the players there is phenomenal.
It's you just look at the four teams involved this weekend, it's outrageous. And I'm sure you saw it last weekend when the camera pans to Dan Carter and Tanu Umaga as water boys. It's probably going to be a little bit longer before we see Carter involved with the Blues, but like that is something to save for when it does eventually happen, because I know he got neck surgery last year and they're obviously in good shape, so they don't necessarily need him right now.
No, they don't. I think Atira Weir last week played brilliantly for the Blues at out half, and Barrett was at full back, so they're not short at out half, fly half options. But having someone like Carter back within the group, and I think the Blues have have been an underperforming group for a number of years, and I think they look like that. You know, I know it's still very, very early, but they look strong last weekend, and a lot of good players coming through. And having someone like Carter come back into the group, bringing his experience, will only benefit them. How many games will he play? How often will he be involved? But it's a short-term stint for him. But I think it's brilliant to get someone with that kind of experience and quality back into their group.
For sure. Next Monday as well, Alan, before we let you go, there's a new series for OTB Sports launching. It's How's the Head? It's going to be available exclusively on the OTB Sports app, which you can download right now. This has been something you've been working on for the last little while, Alan. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, I just had an idea on just... it wasn't to do an Alan Quinlan podcast. It was just literally... how intriguing it would be just to chat to some people, how they were dealing with the, you know, the lockdown, and not just in Ireland, but in across in New Zealand. When I spoke to John Kerwin, and he's someone that inspired me a lot in helping me a little bit with some challenges I had around my mental health and stuff. He's an All Black legend, but what he's done for mental health in New Zealand, setting up a foundation, and been very open and honest about his own challenges, always intrigued me. So I wanted to just try and chat to a few people, see how they were dealing with it, and what kind of advice they would have in their own story. It wasn't solely about mental health, because I spoke to Pat Short about how he was dealing, what life would be like for him, you know, with social distancing, him being an actor, a performer, how would he deal with that? And Danny O'Reilly from the Coronas as well, how would the music industry be affected? So we did a couple. We have a couple of more podcasts to come out, but I think the first one with John Kerwin is certainly something that, aside from my involvement in it, something that really intrigued me and always intrigues me. He's a very inspiring person who, you know, speaks so sensibly and well, and has done so much around mental health, not just in New Zealand, but throughout the world. So I really loved having a chat with him, and I just found it really, really interesting every time I speak to him. So, we're going to put him out next week. We've been a couple of weeks just holding off, and hopefully they get a good reaction, I think. And hopefully, certainly the John Kerwin one, I think, will certainly help people.
How did John Kerwin help you?
I think sometimes people say to me about mental health, and when you know, I kind of spoke out a little bit, and obviously when you're a professional athlete and there's people, you know, when I put stuff in my book about my mental health and the challenges I would have had, and how I didn't have a lot of understanding about how to look after my mental health and what it was all about, people would come up to me and say, look, that's helped me, and it's given me the confidence to go and see my GP or make some sort of a lifestyle change or speak to a family member or stuff. And I always found that very humbling and really nice that you may have an effect on someone. John Kerwin had a similar effect to me, because I read his book, and here was a guy who was a superstar New Zealand rugby player. He was a god. He was a try scorer. He was good looking. He was tall. He was handsome. He was had the world at his feet, and he was a superstar in New Zealand. And he wanted to end his life a lot of the time. And he put a lot of time and effort into hiding that kind of internal trauma, if you like. So hearing his story about how he, you know, spoke about that and kind of took that weight off his shoulders, and he makes a point that New Zealand were playing Argentina one time in Buenos Aires, I think, and he was looking out the window the morning of the test match, and he wanted to jump out the window. He didn't want to play the test match, and that's phenomenal to be in that situation, that, you know, you're playing sport, you're a star, you're playing for the All Blacks, and you feel like jumping out the window off a balcony, not going playing a match for your country. And he was a pin-up boy in New Zealand. So I think it was really... I've spoken to him many times, and he's inspired me to say, well, you know, because I met him a few times and had chats, that there is a better way to feel if you have depression or a mental health problem. It doesn't have to define you. It doesn't have to drag you down for the rest of your life. You can actually live with it in a positive way and be open about it. And that's what he does. So if you met John Kerwin, and I would say this to anybody who's ever meets John Kerwin, he radiates positivity, which doesn't really make sense to somebody if they don't understand that, what I mean. But for someone who has a pretty heavy mental health problem, is very open about it, he's a very, very positive person, and he's a very positive person to be around. And really, he says that's because he's taken this weight off his shoulders, and he's open about it. He's not any way ashamed about it like he used to be, putting all the time and effort into hiding it. So that's how he's helped me, really, to say that it is okay to kind of have a mental health problem and still live a pretty positive life.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds fantastic, Alan. That interview is coming up on Monday with John Kerwin. Just download the app and click on the radio tab at 12 o'clock to listen to OTB Sports Radio. Alan, enjoy the rugby from the Southern Hemisphere over the course of the weekend. We'll chat to you next week. Do. Good luck.
Cheers, Owen. Thanks.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.